I like it. It's BBC London 94.9 with Harriet Scott and Tim Arthur. And we're talking in this hour about mindfulness. What we aim to do in this hour of our programme is to get someone in, an expert like, who can help us out, who can help us make sense of this crazy world that we live in. Dominic Morris joins us now. Morning, Dominic.
Good morning.
Good morning. You are a mindfulness teacher and trainer.
Yes.
Now, before you were a mindfulness trainer, does that make you, I don't think of the word.
It was a clue. I don't know.
Okay, help me out. What I wanted to say was psychopath. Like that's not what
it's
I mean.
It's definitely not a psychopath.
No. What's it called? A psychologist?
Counsellor. Were you a counsellor
right.
before?
Words.
Yeah.
Right. No, in fact, I was a teacher.
Yes.
I was a languages teacher, a secondary school teacher. And it was through that I thought, wouldn't it be wonderful to teach mindfulness to the young people that I was working with? So I began doing that, and then I began also thinking, wouldn't it be wonderful to share this with colleagues, with other staff? And so I began doing that, and one thing led to another, and now I work for the Mindfulness in Schools project. But as far as I'm aware, I wasn't a psychopath. So
that's,
no, so.
That's good. I love that. That's the word
the
you went
worst
for.
Intro
before that,
I've
were you a psychopath?
Done.
No. For people who don't know the term mindfulness, I know that it's. I mean, it's written about a lot now, and it's starting to be kind of trending a bit. But people who don't know what mindfulness is, how would you describe it?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we can acknowledge that our mental health and happiness are shaped by what we do with our attention in any moment. So we, right now, your attention, listeners, is probably to some extent on my voice, on the sound coming out the radio, or the whatever you're listening to the to me through. But your attention in the next moment could go to maybe your child, you know, asking for Cocoa Pops, or a thought about the FA Cup later today, or maybe a memory from what happened last night. So our attention is constantly being kind of hijacked or taken to whatever's most pressing, whatever it's being called to. And I think that often our attention is actually being taken off into thoughts or daydreams or worries about the future, about things that haven't yet happened, or about the past, about things that have happened, and kind of thinking those over, ruminating about those. And mindfulness is basically saying that this is a skill that we can learn to pay attention on purpose in the present moment, right now, to things as they are, with this curiosity and with a sense of acceptance. So rather than our mind being off quite so much, kind of shuttling between the past and the future, we can learn to be present more often to what's actually happening right now.
I already know I could listen to you for an hour.
I know, it was good. You were hypnotising.
No, you're brilliant.
Some people out there will inevitably go, sounds quite an airy-fairy, quite a spiritual thing. But my understanding of mindfulness is that, I think, was it right that its basis was in some Buddhist teachings, but now really it's a quite a practical way of coping with the stresses of today's life?
I'd say mindfulness really is practical, and that was what drew me to it in terms of teaching young people. Is I saw it as a practical toolkit that they can have with them, you know, almost like a belt that they're carrying with them. And whatever happens during the day, whether it's something difficult, you know, or whether it's something kind of pleasant, they've got a strategy they can sort of pull out of their belt to deal with that moment in a more helpful way. So it really is a kind of practical thing. And also I'd say it's a human quality or a human skill that we can develop. And so, yes, there's a sense that the Buddhist tradition has provided a sort of roadmap for how to train our attention, but it isn't a kind of a Buddhist thing. It comes from being human. We have this capacity that we can develop. But the Buddhist tradition has been helpful, very helpful, in providing a kind of roadmap of how to do that. But there's also other traditions which honour this kind of, you know, being present, being aware.
And does it stem literally from this book I've got in front of me, which I bought about 8 months ago because one of my best friends bought it. She said to me, you know, have you heard about mindfulness? She read it. She used to be in recruitment. Mm-hmm. She's now training to be a yoga teacher.
Wow.
Yeah, she's my ripe old age, and she was never even very good at yoga. And I was like, but you know, you're not. And when have you ever done yoga? And she says, but that doesn't matter. It's all about the mind. And she says right. She wants women of her age to go to this class to find some peace. And it doesn't matter if you can't do all the poses. It's not necessarily about
absolutely,
that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Does it start from this book? Is this the book where it starts?
So that book, this is The Mindfulness Finding Peace in a Frantic World by Williams and Penman, is a very popular book. I think some crazy statistics about how long it's been a bestseller on Amazon, and something like 1 in 8 households in this country now own that book or something like that. It doesn't stem from that book. No, that's a book that's kind of made it...
hijacked it.
No, I wouldn't say hijacked, but it's...
popularised?
It's popularised it, absolutely.
You said smugly.
So diplomatic.
Just shaking my head.
So diplomatic.
But essentially that book is making this... I'd say more accessible for the everyday person. So this is not something that there needs to be anything wrong with you that you would practice mindfulness. This is about saying that life can feel busy and can feel frantic for many of us, and that actually this is a practical thing that any of us can benefit from by just spending a bit of time each day, carving out a space where we can just practice this. You know, it might just be 10 minutes where we're just practicing being, not having to kind of be busy and to be doing things and to be thinking about things, but actually just to be being with in mindfulness we use, you know, the breath or the sense of the body, the sense of just your feet on the floor right now, that physical sensation of that. Can you feel your feet on the floor right now?
Yeah.
I haven't actually got my feet on the floor. To be honest, I felt guilty. As you said that, I then put them down on the floor. They are now on the floor.
Where were they if they weren't on?
They were just like suspended. I was sort of just wobbling them around, but that's because I'm very short. That's literally up time I can't reach the floor, but that's I get the point. I tell you what we can do. We can listen to... Yeah, all right. We can listen to Frank's in Streatham. Frank, are you there?
Good morning, you lovely people.
Oh, Frank.
Frank.
Can I just say quickly, happy belated birthday, Harriet.
Thank you ever so much.
And how lovely to hear Lisbeth Stainton on the radio. We don't hear her often enough.
We don't, do we? No, that's the Harriet song that I played.
Oh,
you,
yes,
Harriet.
Yes, yes.
Yes. So, Frank, I believe you practice mindfulness.
Yes, I do. I came across mindfulness almost by accident because I suffer from depression. I suffer from panic attacks, or I used to. Because I don't anymore. And my panic attacks, what I used to do naturally was I started breathing. Because I'm an acting singer as well, so kind of breathing comes with the territory. So I would, whenever I felt the panic attack coming on, so I would start breathing. And through a community centre in Hammersmith, they offered a 3-month mindfulness meditation course. And so I went, and we were 10 people. We got together once a week, and we did group meditations. We talked about a lot of what it means to be in the moment, which to me, I find it makes most sense if you do mindfulness not from a book. I find it makes most sense if you do it with a human being, or best with several human beings.
Yes. And how does it, what does it mean to you practically on a daily basis? Are you meditating?
The meditation that come with it, they can only last 10 minutes. It doesn't have to be, we all started with daily meditations that lasted, they can last between half an hour to an hour. During the course, we were guided by our teacher. But he gave us what he recorded himself giving guiding those meditations on tape, so that we could do it at home with his voice. Mm-hmm. I don't do it anymore daily, but I find that a lot of times, and particularly when, for instance, the other thing that happens that makes me. That calms me down is my cat. So, and just to give it as an example, if you have a purring cat on your lap, you focus on the purr, on the cat, on that moment. And that, to me, is my anchor to kind of bring me back into being in that particular moment. And I think it can be any, kind of whatever in your daily life makes you focus on the moment, and to me it's the purr of my cat, it helps. And so it helps bringing the whole thing, I think, away from being so esoterical and being looked as so esoterical to a daily tool. And it just becomes a daily tool. And I tell you one thing, you know, kind of I used to suffer from terrible stage fright. It helps me with that. And my panic attacks are gone. My depression is eased without medication.
That's amazing.
And I just find it's become a daily tool of help.
Frank, that's fantastic. Thanks so much for joining us today.
You're
Frank.
Welcome.
Thanks for sharing. And is that, Dominic, is that quite common? I mean, that's quite a common approach, is it? And common effects of it?
Well, not everyone has a cat, but you mean in terms of just it becoming a...
It becoming part of their daily life,
yeah.
And then them interpreting it, I guess, in their own way for themselves, whatever works.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. In the sense that we all lead very different lives, not one thing is going to work for everyone, and we make it our own thing. So for some people, if you've got the walk to the train station in the morning or to the tube station, that's a wonderful time just to feel your feet on the floor, and then the mind will start flying off to other places and times, and just coming back to feel your feet on the floor and your breath. And that 10 minutes can be used to practice mindfulness. It doesn't, you know, there's so many opportunities during the
really?
day.
Really? Because I would think because I started reading this book and then I saw there was a CD in the back and I thought, oh, here we go. I haven't got time to meditate.
Right.
Do you know? Which is ridiculous because I'm probably the very person that should be meditating. Mm. But it's great to know that you say it can be done as part of your daily life. It's not like you have to then set aside, you have to get up half an hour earlier and sit in the corner with your legs crossed and burn a candle.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a couple of things there. That on the one hand, it's true. It can be practiced walking to the train station, you know, with your cat. Whenever, when you're running, when you're swimming. But it does seem as well, and I'm sorry, you're probably not going to want to hear this, but it does seem as well that carving out even a small amount of time, even 10 minutes, to practice just that in a kind of quiet conditions where we're not going to be disturbed, where you can really train this muscle of our attention, really focus on that, feels really helpful, because that allows you then in your day, you know, when you're making your radio program and you're talking to someone, or when you're with your kids, to draw on what you've developed in that kind of training in that 10 minutes, then you can bring it into your life.
Okay, we'll have loads of questions for you. And if anyone has a question for Dominic, he's a mindfulness teacher and trainer, then please do call us. We've got him until 11. You can call us on 0207 224 2000. You can text 81333 and start your text with the word London. Email yourlondon@bbc.co.uk. Find us on Facebook or send us a tweet at bbclondon949.
And I'd love to hear from anyone. If they've just got other ways that they find in their daily life, that they techniques that they use just to de-stress, I'd love to hear it. But now let's have a track. It's time for Search for the Hero by M People.
BBC London 94.9.
Good morning. It's 10:34 and 12 seconds here on Sunday, the 25th of January. You're listening to Tim Arthur and Harriet Scott here on BBC London 94.9. And today we're talking about how can you find peace in your everyday life? And we're talking about the practice of mindfulness, which is a technique, I guess, to help you find that peace and find and being present in the moment. And we're joined by Dominic Morris, who's a mindfulness teacher and trainer. Morning, Dominic.
Good morning.
One of the things you do, Dominic, is you run the Mindfulness in Schools programme. Is that right?
The Mindfulness in Schools project.
I
work for them rather than...
Right, you work for it. One of the things I'm wondering is, how do you take this kind of thing into a group of... say 11 or 12 year olds, or what's the, you know, how do you suddenly introduce this to a bunch? I mean, if anybody's minds are full and active and frenetic, it's kind of, you know, early kids.
Yeah.
How do you start with them?
Yeah. Well, the first thing we do with them is we talk about how, you know, about neuroplasticity and about how what we do with our attention actually changes our brains. And we talk about London black cab drivers, and we know that black cab drivers have got a part of their brains which is more active in large compared to you or I, because they use that part of their brain. It's to do with directions. So what we do with our attention actually affects our brains, and that kind of catches them straight away. And then we talk about how mindfulness is a mind training that can change your brains and change your mind in positive ways. But we give them all the different possibilities of the ways this could help them, you know, playing sports. We talk about the sportsmen who use this.
How does it work? How could it work for that?
So, for example, Johnny Wilkinson, has talked about, you know, when he does that little pose before he's going to take the kick.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's got 60,000 people in the stadium, millions more at home. You know, potentially a
makes
lot
me
of
so
pressure.
Nervous. I know. When footballers are about to take a penalty, suddenly went, my stomach starts churning.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if it goes through the post, we win the World Cup, etc. And he's talked about how what he does there is he stops. He basically, in a way, does what we teach the kids to do, which is called a dot B, which is to stop, full stop, dot, and B stands for breathe. And he talks about how he stops, something along the lines of he feels his thumbs, he does that thing with his thumbs, he looks at the posts, he maybe takes a breath, feels his thumbs, and then he kicks, you know, and there's a sense that all the possible worries and things have kind of just eased down a bit, and he can be really in the moment and he can perform as well as he can. So, you know, and I use this when I play football, in Saturday League football. It's really helpful for sports, for music, playing a concert, you know, with the audience, but also in terms of just being able to concentrate and pay attention when you want to revise or when you're about to go into an exam and the mind's going busy with, oh God, will my questions come up? Will they not come up? You know, just a way to kind of settle yourself and do as best you can.
And actually for kids at the moment, they're under so much pressure. I think there's more pressure on kids in schools than ever before.
Yeah.
My mum does quite a lot of work with kids for that very reason. They're actually kids just breaking down under the kind of pressure of the workload they've got. But to be able to give them a technique as well to just ease that, even just to give them some space in their head to be able to think and concentrate, must be fantastic.
When you talk about meditating, this probably sounds like a really daft question, but what if I was going to do it later today, what am I supposed to think about?
Okay.
How do you, you know, because the more you try and empty your mind, I imagine the busier it can become.
That's a really good question. And it's probably...
write that down. That was a good
question. Yeah, I know. Harriet.
It's probably like the biggest misconception about mindfulness is that you're trying to empty your mind. So the first thing to do is just to let go of that idea.
Okay.
Okay. Because when you stop and you actually meditate, you actually focus on, if you use the CD in the book or you use an app, you'll be asked to, you know, focus on your breath or your body. And so the idea is not so much to think about it. Is it possible, rather than thinking about our breath, can you just feel, right now even, could you just feel...
Changing
the posture.
I put my feet on the floor.
Yeah, could you just feel the contact points between the feet and the floor? And notice, you know, where you feel that contact. Is it in the heels? Is it in the soles? Do you notice any sensations in the feet? Warmth? Coolness? Buzzing. So we're not so much thinking about the feet, but just feeling the embodied sense of them. And then if I've got just a moment more for this, you could just also place your hand on your belly and just feel the breath as it comes into the body and leaves the body.
Don't laugh, that's good.
So yeah, we can notice how this feels unusual, or but just coming back and just feeling the belly rising and falling for a couple of breaths.
That's quite a lot of breathing on air.
I know.
But do you get a sense of it?
Yeah.
And when you do that, your mind will wander.
Yes.
And it will go off to thinking about the kids or think about whatever.
Yeah.
And that's perfectly fine. Yeah. That's totally normal and natural. And you just go, ah, okay, my mind's gone off to the kids again because that's what's on my mind.
Yeah.
And we just bring it back to the breath with a kindness without giving yourself a hard time.
And
that's nice.
What's okay? I mean this in a very nice way. Why should I?
Why
what's
should
the
you?
Point?
Yeah, absolutely. Because then in your life, if you've trained yourself to come back to the breath, to come back to the present, right? Then in your day, when you're with the kids, in those busy moments, when you're with colleagues, whatever, you will also be able to come back to your breath, come back to the present moment. And that creates more choice for you in that moment because you're aware and you can be aware. And so when someone says something that's a bit annoying, for example, and irks you a bit, and you're about to maybe react and say something that you might later regret, you can just take a breath and that creates a slither of space where you can choose, how do I want to respond to this?
In with anger, out with love.
Absolutely. We've got a call on the line. It's Yarden in Israel. Hello, Yarden.
Hello, Tim. Hello, Harriet.
Hi.
How are you this lovely day?
I forgot the name of your guest.
It's Dominic. Hasn't he got a gorgeous voice?
Yeah, Dominic. Oh, how could I forget? It's such a special name. Hello, Dominic.
Hello there. Hi.
I'm very, very close to this topic of meditating and finding peace. And Because I don't know, have you heard about anthroposophy, Dominic? It's also a... It's a, you have lots of Steiner schools in England.
Yeah.
And Steiner, Rudolf Steiner gave lots of ways of meditating and finding peace. And but one of my ways of finding peace is that I'm a musician. And I play a musical instrument called the modern lyre. It's a lyre. It's spelled L-Y-R-E. It's a string instrument, and it's like, it's basically it's like a harp.
Yeah.
We don't go in now to the differences of technique and structure of the instrument, but the main thing is that the tone qualities are so very therapeutic.
Mm.
And because it's my career, so I play the lyre, you know, for a long time every day. And that, and I'm a big worrier. Oh, I'm telling you, I'm a I'm living in a very stressful situation, actually, at the moment, because I have lots of financial worries and worries in terms of career and other personal issues. And I'm a big worrier. I've been such, I think, since I was the age of 10, because I had... The first 10 years of my life were very, very happy. I had a very, very happy childhood. Since the age of 10, I became a worrier.
Mm.
And when I found this instrument, you know, now I'm playing it for almost 15 years, and it's really, when I play it, I feel so, it's as if the music and the tones are streaming into my bloodstream. It's wonderful.
So in Yarden, is it almost, when you play, is that almost like a meditation for you then? Do you just get carried away and into the physical action and the connection with the music?
Oh yes. Yes, definitely. Mm. And also...
I was just going to say, Yarden, you know, it kind of harks back to our previous caller who was talking about how a similar kind of related experience, but with the cat, you know, and there's a sense that there's different ways into this. There's so many different ways into this. You know, it could be listening to the next track, which Tim and Harriet play, and just really sensing the music and the noticing the pitch and the tone and the melody and these sort of things, which, you know, so it's lovely to hear, you know, your example of just another way into this, really.
Oh, yes.
Yarden, thanks so much for joining us. Sometime, Yarden, you must come on and play for us. We'd love to hear it at some point, Yarden.
That would be wonderful.
Thanks for joining us. Have a lovely Sunday, Yarden.
Thank you.
When hearing Yarden talk about being a worrier, I used to be a real worrier.
Mm.
And then I bought those books. I don't know if it's a Dale Carnegie book. I don't think it is. No, it's somebody else. But the Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, that book.
Right.
But the conclusion of that book, have you read that book,
no,
Tim?
No.
The conclusion of that book is, and it's all small stuff. And it's all very well, but then it basically means that whatever it is, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Do you know? And you sort of think, well, there are some things that you sort of do want to
you
worry
should
about.
Do. It's the calming the mind at certain times I find tricky. So nighttime is the worst for me.
Yes.
But I had a lovely therapist at one point who said, don't stay in bed. Now, his advice to me was, he said, when do you get most anxious? I say, I get into bed and then my brain, it only takes one thought will pop in, and then it triggers this sort of spiralling of different things come in, different voices. And the advice he gave to me was, don't stay in bed.
Mm.
He said, get up, distract yourself and do something. Mm. And for a period of time, and it did work really well, actually, I used to go downstairs and I used to chant for a bit. I grew up in like a Buddhist household. My mum and dad were Buddhist. And so I used to do a chant. That would kind of calm myself down. I'd have a cup of tea. Then I'd go back to bed. And actually just breaking that kind of not listening to the voice, doing something that distracted me, took me away, concentrating on something else, actually meant that later on I could go back to sleep.
And when you went back to bed, you could sleep.
Yeah. And the thing, yes, absolutely, I could. And the thing I always forget is to do that. That's the problem, is I get out of the practice of doing it. I kind of know when I'm doing it, I feel great. I feel like, oh, that's helping me.
Mm.
And then suddenly I'll have a cold or something will happen, whatever it is, a bit like going down the gym. Mm. Something breaks that pattern and you go, all right, I'm out of it then. And I forget to keep it as part of my toolkit.
That's right. And the hardest thing that, you know, we just did a bit of mindfulness. You can do this. It's doable. But the hardest thing, as you say, Tim, is to remember to do it, because we get so easily caught up, as you say, into our habitual kind of stuff that goes on and different routines and the busyness of life. So that's the challenge, is to work enough with our own minds, practicing, training the attention, that we can then remember to bring it into our lives when we need it.
Do you think that we're not spiritual enough, really? I don't know whether if it's particularly Londoners who maybe do have a busier life than other people in Britain. I don't know. I'm just thinking of myself and my friends. We don't tend to talk about it much, but maybe that's my circle of friends. My sister-in-law is extremely spiritual. Mm. She's just been to do that. Is it called Vipassana? I don't know where she's been to Cambodia or something and didn't talk for 10 days. I mean, she did that level of meditation. She's very spiritual, and comes back ever so refreshed. And I'm just thinking, could I shut up for 10 days?
See, I think it's the thing about finding...
Should we try 5 minutes?
Not now, though, obviously. Yeah, that would be a weird one for the listeners. But what I find interesting, I think it's about finding what's right for you, isn't it? And then how you can do things. When I was 19, did I talk about this before? Went up to the Buddhist temple. I took myself to a Buddhist temple when I was 19, up in Scotland, and it was the first time lamas had ever come from Tibet to do lama dancing, a really rare thing to inaugurate this new temple. And I was very excited and very privileged to be allowed to go.
Yeah.
But what wasn't right for me, it was a silent order, and I just could not deal with that. And the other thing is, at that age, I was 19,
yeah,
everything happened at sunrise and I didn't take an alarm clock with me, so I kept getting up at 12 o'clock and I missed everything, literally.
Didn't anyone wake you?
Honestly, the lama dancing apparently had never been seen outside of Tibet for like 2,000 years or something. Yeah, I missed everyone. I would get up and there would be people looking incredibly peaceful and just overjoyed at this great experience, and I'd be going, was it good? So I missed it. So right time and right place. Find the thing that's right for you at the right time.
That's so funny. Do call us. We're talking about mindfulness. And if you do meditate, or what you do, whether it's a hobby or a piece of music or something that you do to find inner peace, or maybe you don't think you need it. I think I plough through my life thinking I don't need it, but I'm probably the very person that does. You can call us on 0207 224 2000. Let's play a song. This is Jack Savaretti and Home.